So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation.
Go ahead.
You didn't tell me you were going to do that. You didn't tell me. Continue, please. Continue.
OU Insider subscribers, Jesse Crittenden fans, those of you who are used to Jesse giving this intro to the world's greatest podcast, this podcast is probably for you. This is the Oklahoma Drill, presented by Rivals and On3, and then I don't remember how you...
the hyphens and slashes.
All that stuff. That's Jesse. I'm Brian. It's SEC football week.
I feel like Will Ferrell in Talladega Nights, because I don't know what I do with my hands. And also, you didn't tell me you were going to do that.
No, that was just totally impromptu. ADHD got the better of me. So.
I love it, but it also there's a part of me that's like, did Brian do that because he's sick of me doing it? Like, he's tired of hearing
Negative.
My voice do that?
That's no.
Well, people who like surprises, this is apparently the podcast for you, because I like surprises, and that surprised me. Appreciate you guys tuning in to this episode of the Oklahoma Drill, where... Brian, what I would have said is people who are excited or nervous or frothing at the mouth for Jackson Arnold to make his return to Norman, this is the pod for you. And we're recording this pod just a few minutes after the SEC availability report came out. We are recording this on a Thursday evening. So the availability report came out Wednesday, the first one of the week. It just got updated just now, and the big news of tonight's availability report is Jake Mikla, Fabechi Wiwu, and Michael Fasusi are all now listed as probable to play this weekend. And as I say that, every OU fan lets out a big sigh of relief, probably you included.
Yeah,
because that was the news of yesterday. Well, there was two bits of news yesterday. Those three guys were all listed as questionable with legitimate injuries. There being some level of concern with all three of those guys.
Yeah,
that any one of them could miss, and also that Marvin Jones Jr., defensive end Marvin Jones Jr., is listed as questionable. He is still listed as questionable.
Yeah,
on tonight's report. And Brian, we touched on this for a second before we started recording. I think for people who I've gotten this on our board too. About can you fake injuries or exaggerate injuries on these reports, you know, have some gamesmanship? And the answer is not really. The SEC is really strict about these availability reports. There are fines potentially for misrepresenting a player's injury or their availability on these reports. And I'm not saying you can't, there's not like a little wiggle room, but I can tell you this. If Marvin Jones Jr. is still listed as questionable on Thursday night, that tells me that there's a for real chance he won't play. Yeah. But the big news being the offensive line, those three guys are available. Brian, you let out a sigh of relief. How important is that for you? How much better do you feel?
Well, yeah, it's huge. Jake Mikla, obviously on the heels of Troy Everett being out for the rest of the season, you need Jake Mikla as much as you have all season long. And then not to mention Fabechi Wiwu being your backup center now, having both of those guys available, yeah, that's a good thing. obviously, getting Michael Fasusi back at left tackle, you feel better with him being able to be in the game. And I want to just kind of throw in there, part of my sigh of relief is for Keontez Lewis.
That's also, yes.
I mean, first of all, the shot looked, it looked from the broadcast, it looked like, you know, it might be something that would keep him out for a while. So I'm glad to see him on probable. And then obviously from a game standpoint, if Javonte Gibson is doubtful, obviously having Keontez Lewis available is huge. So
I said this on the radio yesterday. I think I was with the franchise. I actually said, like, as much as Armason Thomas missing the first half is a big deal against Auburn, and it is, it's a big deal. I actually think if Keontae Lewis were to miss, that would sneakily be a tougher thing to adjust to for the offense than it will be for the defense to adjust to Armason Thomas. And it's because if you watch film, if you watch those first two games, Keontae Lewis is good, man. He's honestly exceeded my expectations. And the thing he's best at is just like, he just gets open.
Mm-hmm.
He just gets open. And when you combine that with the lack of rotation that we had seen at receiver through the first 3 weeks, especially against Michigan, you were, I mean, there were, if Keontae Lewis couldn't play, you were about to have to throw in Kearney or Kerryon or Jermichael Carter, guys that are capable, but just haven't played very much. And that's that would have been a hard thing to try to adjust to against Auburn. Yeah. I'll tell you this also about these offensive linemen being able to play changes my outlook on the game. If any of those guys, let alone multiple, would have changed my perception of this game.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Gunnar Allen took three snaps at center, took the backup snaps against Temple, which he's a walk-on. That's not throwing shade at him. It's just that's not, oh, he was going to have to go to him or Eddie Pierre-Louis or somebody who is not a center or does not regularly play center. That would have been a tough ask.
Yeah, it'd been tough. The other part about it is like, you look at the guys that are listed on their outside of the offensive line. Danny Okoye back is probable now. Marvin Jones Jr., as you mentioned, being questionable. With Armason Thomas out, I mean, that's three of your perceived top four or five pass rushers that are questionable or will at least miss half the game. But as you said, I think I look at that defensive line. I look at what we've seen from Taylor Wine to this point. I look at what we've seen from PJ to this point, and those guys, I think the drop-off is not substantial there. Having Keontae Lewis back with three games of experience with John Mateer, it's huge. And then on top of that... whoever you have at center, which it looks like Jake Michael is probably the guy, you're going to need the experience is as important as anything else with defense with a game like this. You want those guys to be able to get up and be ready for the moment, kind of like we saw with the same group. Against Michigan. So if you can roll those five out there, I think you feel pretty good about things on that side of the ball.
Oh, that's what I noted in my story that I wrote before we hopped on the pod, was that assuming there's no setbacks, so he's going to be able to throw out the five guys they had against Michigan on offensive line. And that's huge. I will say, if Marvin Jones Jr. is still questionable, I would bet he'll play. That's my guess, but there's clearly he's dealing with enough. I think it's his back. He's dealing with enough that I think you have to wonder about how much that limits him, how much of an issue that is. Because you're right. Like, I mean, Taylor Wine can play, PJ can play. I mean, I asked Brent about PJ on Tuesday specifically because even with Armason Thomas out, he's going to have to play a bigger role. Right. Marvin Jones Jr. has probably been the best defensive end through 3 weeks.
I 100% agree with that.
And if he can't play or is limited, that hurts. But like you mentioned, I think you could still cobble some bodies together. Then you get Armason Thomas back in the second half. I think we just jump right into this Auburn game because we've got these availability reports and we're recording this Thursday. So it's not really timely for me to tell you about my jaunt to Philadelphia. Other than I will say, I'm a Cowboys fan, unfortunately, and I still feel the need to defend them. Philly, as a city, is better than Dallas, and the Eagles Stadium is just a better stadium than Jerry World, and it's not even
that,
close.
That part
it's not even close.
The city one was more surprising, but I guess it's really not now that I think about it. Why? Appease me here. Why? What made Philly the better city? I can understand
I can understand stadium. I'm a sucker for open air. I like domes or even though Minnesota plays in one. But
well, the Eagle Stadium feels like a college stadium. And that's part of why I like it. And it also just feels like lived in and where Jerry World just feels so corporate. Let me make it clear. Yeah. I like Dallas. I genuinely, sure. I like Dallas. I don't like Fort Worth as much, but I like Dallas. Mm-hmm. But Philly is just like, it's just cool. And when you go
like history.
Yeah. You genuinely feel the history of it.
Yeah.
The way the cities are laid out, the way the streets are laid out, the way the city is oriented. I mean, you walk around enough, you're just gonna fall face first into really cool historical stuff.
Like Nick Cage running around with a map of the Declaration.
I kept on saying to Chapman, I'm gonna steal it. I'm gonna steal the Declaration of Independence. Do you think people watching this pod have watched National Treasure?
I hope so. If they haven't, they need to go and watch it big time. Have to.
It may be the greatest movie of all time, so I really hope people have seen it.
Yeah.
But fun. It was a fun jaunt to Philly, but now, oh my God, it's week four and Auburn comes to town. And I don't know if you knew this, Brian. Also, you won the game against Temple. Spoiler alert. I don't know if you knew this, but Jackson Arnold plays for Auburn. He played at Oklahoma last year, and now he plays for Auburn.
Wild.
It's almost like a return game or a revenge game. No one said that to this point, but I will say it now.
Wow. What a headline. I hadn't even thought about that.
I'm going to publish a big expose tomorrow because I don't think people are aware of this storyline. But I am actually endlessly fascinated by this matchup. And as much as Texas will be fun and South Carolina will be fun and Tennessee and Bama, I'm actually, there's something unique about this matchup on Saturday that I have loved to analyze. And I think even the Jackson Arnold part of it is part of it because there's a real emotional aspect to this game. But when you think of this matchup, what immediately comes to mind for this week? I think OU is what, they're a 5.5 point favorite. It's 2:30 p.m. on ABC.
Yeah.
What comes to mind? What do you think of when you think of Auburn coming to town? Where does Oklahoma stand?
Put my fan hat on here. Yeah. What comes to mind is you went to Auburn, Alabama last year with both hands tied behind your back on offense. And walked out of there with a win. Now, it was a lot. There was a lot more nuance to it than that. Obviously, you got Kip Lewis making one heck of a play. Defense was strong. Armason Thomas closed that game out. I believe it was him and Robert Spears Jennings in that final drive with sacks on back-to-back plays, if I remember right. But anyways, you fast forward a year, Auburn's coming to Norman. Improved at quarterback, I would say.
I would agree.
But I would say kind of a wash at most of the, like, it's, I don't know that there's a whole lot of improvement or fall off from the rest of the team last year. Just from what I've gathered, I think they were a physical team last year. Tried to run the football a little bit, but I mean, I look at this matchup and it feels like both teams come into this with similar offensive philosophies. I think Oklahoma is going to be more that they'll have more ability to throw the ball down the field. I think it stretched the defenses vertically, but you're really, I think you're going to see very similar approaches with quarterback run, traditional run, and then obviously trying to get the ball to your playmakers out in space. It's going to be an interesting matchup. I really am curious to see what the reception for Jackson Arnold is like.
I can tell you.
I know that it's going to be hostile, but like the kid did. I don't know. The kid did give it his, he gave it his all last year. I couldn't really fault him for the decision that was made. But it's going to be really tough to come back into Norman and play. So we'll just have to see.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about Jackson specifically. To your initial question, what the reception is going to be like, it's going to be bad. They're going to boo him. Sure. And it will be a little personal. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it's not personal. It's because he plays quarterback for the other team. It'll be a little personal.
Oklahomans, we take things personally.
I'm still not. I mean, the Thunder winning the championship is the first step to me getting over Kevin Durant leaving the team 9 years ago. So,
but
yeah,
it's still not
100%. Not 100%. It's just not.
That's why I feel bad for every kid named Lincoln that's walking around out there in Oklahoma. Just poor kids.
Abraham poor, Lincoln. Poor kids. Abraham Lincoln too. I still feel bad for him too. Speaking of Philly, the country and patriotism. He didn't deserve that. Hot take. Is it fair? Is it fair? Like, does he deserve it? Probably not. Probably not. Like from a personal standpoint, like, does he deserve to be booed because he is him specifically? Probably not. But
who cares about morality?
No, this is football. Morals don't exist in football. But should fans boo him? Yes, if nothing else, because he is the opposing team's quarterback.
Yeah.
And it'll be a little personal, but hopefully that will end when the game is over, right?
Yep.
Here's the thing. Going through his stats, going through his season so far, watching him, this has been a really interesting three games. Because he's running the hell out of the ball.
Yes,
and you have
he
to
is.
Give him a ton of credit for that. Yeah. And they have oriented this offense not only just around Jeremiah Cobb, who is really the fulcrum for this offense, but Jackson Arnold he's a really tough physical runner. I mean, I think he's averaging around 5 yards a carry. I had that in a story earlier this week, but I mean, he's ran the ball over 30 times. He's tied with Cobb for rushing touchdowns with 4. He's run the ball really efficiently. He's really tough between the tackles. We saw some of that last year. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though. The passing numbers aren't good. They're bad.
They are.
Actually, going through the numbers, you want to guess what Jackson Arnold ranks among quarterbacks with passes of 20 yards or more? You want to guess where he ranks?
119th.
Well, there's only 94 eligible quarterbacks, Brian.
Okay, 90th.
He ranks 94th, tied for last.
Oh, okay.
Ranks tied for last. He's had 6 such passes. You want to guess where he ranks for quarterbacks with passes of 10 yards or more? I'll just tell you, dead last. Ranked tied for dead last.
Wow. What's his average depth of attempt?
I don't know what his average depth of attempt is, but I know that he is 91st in the country in yards per completion, 10.4.
Wow.
91st.
Wow.
They don't throw the ball very much. They couldn't really do it against South Alabama, and the passing attempts are low. The explosives are very low. And that comes when you've got receivers like Coleman and Singleton, who are way better than anybody OU trotted out there last year because the wide receiver room was so injured. So there's a part of me that's like, he's Brent kind of said it on Tuesday.
He's the same guy.
And if you look at the numbers,
he's
the same guy. All of the same. Now, is he the biggest reason or the second biggest reason why the offense was terrible last year? Probably not. But the passing numbers for this Auburn team are like eerily similar to OU's passing game a year ago. Auburn's not throwing the ball down the field that much, like at all.
Right. Yeah.
You know? I think that makes things pretty easy for OU defensively.
As far as game plan goes, yes. Absolutely it does. This game really does. It has a propensity to be a lot for Oklahoma defensively, a lot like the Michigan game. I think you
the one difference, the one caveat, as I think the playmakers that you have on the outside in Coleman and Singleton, there are going to be more opportunities for, like, you know, one-on-one spots or jump balls. But I think you still feel really good about making Auburn throw the football. I mean, if here's the thing, like, if you told me Auburn's third downs were an average of like third and seven plus, like that's typically what you have them in, I think Oklahoma wins the game fairly comfortably if they keep them behind the chains. Because I just mentioned it, I think if you get to a position where you can really, the other stat that stood out, and this was on PFF a few days ago, I saw this, but Arnold, his passer rating, he was ninth nationally when he wasn't under pressure. His passer mm-hmm. rating was like ninth, but whenever he was under pressure, he was 133rd. It was dead last. And that's exactly what Oklahoma's defense is centered around, is creating that pressure. Was it 44.6% of their snaps they're creating pressure?
I think it's, yeah.
So, I mean, it just falls right in line with making Jackson Arnold have a really tough night.
Well, that's why, to me, I'm typically not that interested in analyzing a narrative for this game, but like, sure. To me, I think if you're Brent Venables and the staff, you say, we know what to do here. We need to turn him. We need to make him make decisions and make reads.
Yes.
Because he struggles with that. He struggled with it last year. He struggled with it this year. He struggles when he's under pressure. He struggles when he has to stay in the pocket and throw. And then I think when you combine that with the fact that he is coming to Oklahoma, he's coming back, he's going to be in that environment, it's the SEC opener, he didn't do local media this week. Like, there's going to be emotions here, and I do think that's actually a factor here. If the crowd is really loud and OU is able to make him be a passer in that environment, I mean, the recipe for the chances of winning go exponentially. And I don't even mean to mention all those stats to
dog on
the kid.
Like, right, yeah.
Because I think it's clear that last year was so bad, the confidence still isn't there. This is not the quarterback that was recruited out of high school.
No.
To have these kind of passing stats for the second year in a row.
Right.
But, and it's not to say, look, Cam Coleman and Singleton, those guys are athletic and fast enough and big enough that even if they force Arnold to be a thrower just because of their athleticism and skill set, that could still beat.
There's always a chance, yeah.
Yeah, and Cam Coleman was a nightmare for Oklahoma a year ago. Now, obviously, yes, the secondary pieces are different.
Yeah,
but to me, that's the recipe for this game. You make Arnold have to beat you with his arm, and not only beat you with his arm, but by making decisions and having to put the ball down the field.
Yeah. Well, and here's something that I do think is going to play a big role is, and we've already seen Oklahoma do it a lot this year, and it's really a staple just of what BV does defensively, but the change in the picture pre-snap, post-snap, like it's very difficult even for veteran quarterbacks a lot of times to be able to diagnose what is happening with a Venables-led defense, and I think this is exactly this that plays right into it. He will see something pre-snap, think he has it diagnosed, and then everything flips on its head. And I think that's where that internal clock, that's where the overthinking, you know, we watched it last year as Oklahoma fans, we watched it. Whenever you get to that 3-4 second mark into the play and his head starts turning. That was one of the things that really got him in trouble last year. A lot of times was when that head starts turning and he looks down and sees the blitz, he wasn't able to keep his eyes downfield.
Right.
You know, I think that is something it's only been three games with Auburn too. So it's like, there are still going to be some ghosts that he's going to have to deal with. And that's going to be tough.
I'm really curious. how Venables schemes this. Do you sell out to stop Cobb because he is the main part of their offense and he's been really good. Cobb's been really, really good. I think he's 10th in the country in rushing yards. He's averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
Yeah.
They haven't faced a defense like this, obviously, but still, yeah. I mean, he's probably better than Justice Haynes. Auburn probably has a better running attack in general, just from a what they do, how they do it. They'll mix stuff up and make it hard for OU to try to diagnose what's coming, because you can't just sell out to stop Cobb, because Arnold can pull it and run. They do all that RPO mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you try to force it early to make them move away from Cobb? And then even when you get Arnold in passing situations, do you just send the house? Yeah. Do you bring a lot of people back and disguise the coverage?
I would be really surprised if Oklahoma isn't uber aggressive in this game starting out, because I think if you offensively, if you're able to get a lead, I mean, that's huge. And on the defensive side of the ball, being able to force, the last thing that you want to happen is for them to feel like they get in a groove and get moving and get, because I think we saw when their offense has been good this year, primarily against Baylor, obviously there was like 300 yards rushing given up in that game. But when they were able to keep the ball moving and get Jackson settled down and let him run, they were able to do what they needed to get out of there with a win. I just don't think, if I was to guess, I would say you have a similar approach to what we saw against Temple. Just, I mean, because schematically it looks very similar. I just think you might be a little more, maybe even a little more aggressive than you were as far as bringing guys down to the box. Because again, this isn't a slight to the kid. I'm not trying to pile on Jackson Arnold, but I think you are probably more aware of the threat that Temple's quarterback, who had 9 touchdowns coming into the game, I think you're more aware of what he was able to do pushing the ball down the field than you really are worried about what Arnold has done to this point. Now, wide receivers are different, I get that, but like, just from a straight up how we're going to line up and play this, yeah, I think you absolutely do everything in your power to force Arnold to have to throw the ball, and that means just shutting the run game down.
Let's talk a little bit offensively, or let me add one more thing. Corlin Guillory has been awesome through 3 weeks. This is a whole different yep. test.
Yep.
I'm curious to see how much OU decides to leave him on an island, even if it's against Coleman or Singleton, or how much they feel like they need to give him help, safety help, or whatever that looks like.
I think that's big time having Gentry not show up. I think you can probably trust him pretty well.
You've also got Dolby.
Yep. And if you need safety help, you can have it over there if you feel Guillory needs it. I mean, I don't know. That'll be interesting. I'm not even really sure that I thought about it just like that yet. But
yeah, I mean, Cortland's been awesome, but I mean, these Auburn receivers are significantly better than anything Oklahoma's faced through 3 weeks. Yeah. And if Corlin Guillory can hold up on his own one-on-one, OU will win the football game.
Yeah.
I feel pretty, I mean, I know they need to stop Cobb and they need to stop Jackson Arnold's rushing ability, but if Corlin can hold up one-on-one, I feel like Oklahoma's going to win the football game.
Yeah.
I feel pretty confident about that, because they're going to test him.
Correct.
They'll test him. Let's talk about this offense, because to me, this isn't that difficult. I mean, Auburn, yes, OU is much better offensively than anything Auburn has faced, but Auburn is 10th in the country in rushing defense. They are 7th in the country in yards per carry, 2.03. And that's why, again, I think it's huge that OU is in line to have that same starting group they had against Michigan.
Yeah.
We're going to see. I mean, I'm we're going to see a lot of Blaylock in his first SEC game, Toy Blaylock. And that's going to be, I mean, he's the RB1. He's listed as that on the depth chart. Anybody with eyeballs knows he's the RB1.
Yeah.
Also, just as a side note, because it's been talked about to death, so I don't want to go, but I mean, do you try to throw Jay Knott in the game? I mean, I feel like if you were going to throw him out there against Auburn, you play him against Temple. That's just kind of how
I don't know. That's a, again, I still kind of feel, that storyline is just waiting. I feel like that storyline's just waiting to happen. If he's ever going to become a part of the game or a part of the game plan for OU, it'd have to be coming out of the bye week. I mean, really going into Texas. But no, I think right now the absolutes that you can roll with are that Torrey Blaylock's been your best option at running back. And I think your second best option to this point, I mean, Javonte Barnes has been solid in pass pro, and he has been able to get those short yardage situations done. But I think kind of what we saw from Xavier Robinson last week, I think you feel pretty good about those three guys. And if now, obviously, if Ott turns things on in practice, I mean, we don't know this for sure, but we're just kind of going with what seems like the obvious case here. The guy's not showing what he needs to show in practice to live up to the hype that he walked in with. So if that happens, great. He could be, just as Venable said, he could be a huge playmaker for this team. But until further notice, man, I would just expect those other three guys to tote the rock, and you know, we'll just let the chips fall how they may at that point.
We're going to see, I mean, I would be surprised if we see that much Jaden Knott. I think we're going to see a lot of Blaylock, and we're going to see a lot of Barnes. And yep, just because this Auburn defense has been stout again defending the run, and that defensive line is good. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be similar to that Michigan game. I do. And OU struggled to run the ball with a traditional running game against Michigan. I don't think that means OU's not going to try to do it. I think they'll try to do it a little bit, but I don't know about you, Brian, but I look at this and I think John Mateer's going to have to carry the ball a pretty decent amount again. I think they're going to need him to carry the ball 12, 13, 15 times. I do.
Potentially, I would say that might be the case, but it also wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I don't want to be maybe my glasses are becoming too crimson colored pretty quickly, but I just look at what Auburn is to this point. I mean, you just gave up 310 yards to South Alabama. You won the turnover battle 2-0 in that game, but you still gave up 20 first downs to South. Like, again, some of those may have come in garbage time, but I'm looking at this. They didn't give up any points in the fourth quarter. And you look at what South Alabama is versus what they're about to face in Oklahoma. Like, I just don't know that Auburn's defense has been really tested to that point outside of when Baylor figured some things out and made their run to kind of make that game close again towards the end of that game. I honestly feel like Oklahoma, this could be a game where John Mateer kind of gets what he wants in the passing game. And I think that forces Auburn to have to play some coverage a little bit more. And then your traditional running game looks a little different. I don't know. I honestly believe Auburn might be a little bit overrated defensively, just from what I've seen.
Flip that. Put it on social.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yep.
I agree with you. And you mentioned it there. Here's the thing. You might be right. I mean, OU might have more success even with just traditional running game than maybe I'm even expecting. Like, that could absolutely happen. You get that group back out there, that offensive line group. You now know Toy Blaylock is your guy running the ball. You also know Javonte Barnes' role is defined, and those things are really important in terms of shaping what an offense looks like. And you know you have John Mateer that who can run the ball. He barely ran the ball last week. You know you can run him if needed. Here's the thing, though. I don't think OU's going to have any problem throwing the ball against Auburn. I just don't. Auburn's 85th in passing defense.
Yep.
85th. And I think when you combine not only just the quality of receivers that OU can throw out there, and then also John Mateer's ability to make plays happen outside the pocket, that just they haven't dealt they not only haven't dealt with a passing attack like this, they haven't dealt with a quarterback like Mateer who can improvise and scramble. And I mean, even, I think Jaron Canick can have. I'm looking specifically at Jaron Canick and Deion Burks. I think those are two guys that are going to have huge games.
Yeah.
Against this defense.
Yep.
And I think Mateer's, I think they're going to have fits trying to, trying to keep him contained. I really do.
Well, I do too. And I, you know, kind of what I'm looking at from a statistical, I mean, you look at the stats, what Auburn's bringing in here into Norman this weekend defensively. And it's impressive, but if you really take a second look, look a little bit closer. That Ball State game is where they were things that are making them look really good. They, I mean, they held Ball State to -3 yards rushing in that game. They held Ball State to 71 yards passing, which they were 10 of 16 in that game. Ball State was passing, but Ball State scored a total of 3 points against two FBS teams this year. They're just not, they're not a great football team. And I think when you look at what Auburn's done against, for Baylor to do pretty much what they wanted to in the second half and move the ball, if Baylor doesn't have turnover issues in that game, or not turnover issues, well, when, if they don't have the issues that they had driving down the field and then just stalling out, I think that's a totally different game. And with what Auburn brings personnel wise, again, it feels like it's a lot of the same guys from last year. And Oklahoma, just face it, they're in a totally different place than they were this time last year.
Auburn ranks 112th in passing yards of 10 or more, or of passing plays of 10 yards or more given up. They rank 110th. Or 112th, excuse me. They've given up 30 through three games. They've given up 30 play passing plays of 10 yards or more. Wow. They rank 91st in passing plays of 20 yards or more. 91st. They've given up 10.
I wonder how much of that is. I wonder how much of that is having safeties down in the box and committing to the run.
Probably. And all of, and I think Auburn is going to know pretty clearly that they can't sell out to stop the run. I think they know they're going to have to have, they're going to have to be mindful of Mateer being very willing to throw the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
But I just here's to kind of put all of this together. I just, I think the way I look at this is, could Auburn win 100%? Like, if Auburn won the battle ultimately on both lines of scrimmage, where like they were, OU's defensive line isn't dominant, and Auburn's defensive line wins the battle against OU's offensive line, like I could see that. And if OU's defense still can't force turnovers like they haven't been able to through 3 weeks, and OU has a special teams mistake here and a John Mateer interception here, that those things could absolutely swing the game. Or if OU struggles to contain Auburn's rushing attack, I mean, like, I think it's gonna be a competitive close game. I just think Oklahoma has more ways to win than Auburn does.
And I
think, to me, I think Oklahoma wins this game by 10, and I think they'll cover. I just, if Auburn can't run the ball, they will not win the game. If OU can't run the ball, they'll be fine. You know?
Yeah, I, man. You thinking that they cover and win by 10 makes me feel a lot better about my pick, just because you typically are a little more conservative than I am on things. I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud. I've got Oklahoma winning 31-13.
Ooh.
I think a lot of the talk in this game after it's over is going to be about Auburn maybe not being as good as everybody thought that they were. And Oklahoma just kind of ho-hum moves along. Like, I think that's kind of the what you feel coming out of this. But really what it boils down to for me is, I've said it twice already, this team did not have an offensive pulse last year. They didn't. And so much of that played into how Auburn was able to generate points. Yes, I am fully aware that they have guys like Eric Singleton and Cam Coleman. I know that those guys are studs on the outside, but you have to be able to distribute the football to them, and it can't just be in the flats. This Oklahoma team has proven through the last 2 weeks, you throw the ball in the flats, the defense does an excellent job of pursuing to the football and keeping those plays from popping. I just don't think Auburn, I think it's a bad spot for Auburn.
I agree. And I think it only being week four, it's the SEC opener, it's in Norman. I mean, this is a lot to put on Jackson Arnold's shoulders. He's not a robot.
Yeah.
He's not devoid of feelings.
Right.
This is a hard place. This is a hard position to put him in. And then you add on top of it that this defense, this Oklahoma defense, is almost purposefully, not about him specifically, but designed to cover up his strengths and expose his weaknesses.
Yep.
And he could come out and have a great game and it would not shock me. It would not shock me, but I think OU is going to make him one dimensional. And I think they're going to make him do the things he is the worst at. And I think OU will anticipate they can do that and then pounce when that happens. Yeah. I just do. And I just, if Cobb can't run the ball very well, I just don't see how Auburn scores enough points to win. And I don't think, I mean, you even suggest, I mean, 31-13, that wouldn't shock me if it was something like 31-13. I don't think OU is going to dominate the game, and I don't think the offense is going to put up. Yeah. I know you don't either. And I don't think the offense is going to put up 40 points and 570 yards of offense, but I just, you're the fan. I'm just, I'm hands off, but I just think OU is going to be able to score enough. I just don't think Auburn is going to be able to limit enough of what OU does offensively.
I think it's like 24-13 with 5-ish minutes left in the game, and OU tacks another one on, and that's like the going away gift. Like that's the final score.
I think I was thinking like, I don't know, 24-14, 24-10. Yeah. And it's probably 24-14, and maybe it's a game like at halftime it's 14-7 or it's 10-7 or something, you know, or something like that. And then OU just makes a couple of plays offensively down the stretch to really create the separation. I want to make it clear. I genuinely think Auburn can win the football game. I do. Mm-hmm. But I just think OU has a lot more path to victory. The only thing that genuinely gives me hesitance is two things. If Jackson Arnold has the revenge game of all time, which would almost feel karmic in a weird way, or if OU has a couple of those things that we've seen the last couple of years, even against Michigan, where you just, you missed a 42-yard field goal, or, man, the Cetania backed up, or like was backpedaling and muffed a punt and gave Auburn a short field, or, you know, or the defense gets a dumb roughing the passer penalty on a third down. Like, you know, I think it would have to be something like that, which we've seen. So could it happen? Yes.
Yeah, we have. This will be a really good measuring stick for Oklahoma as well. Just like not that Auburn is the most talented team that you've, I don't think they're the most talented team you've seen to this point, top to bottom. I think Michigan, I mean, I do think it, they're very close to what Michigan has personnel wise, but I, for measuring stick purposes, I mean, you're ranked 11th in the country now. Everybody for the last 2 weeks has been talking about how good your defense is. There's plenty of hype coming into this game. You know, everybody it's in, I mean, for the SEC, 2:30 is the primetime spot. This is the biggest game of the week. I know that there are other games going on and, you know, game day isn't enormous, but like, make no mistake, this is the game that everybody's going to be checking the score on. And can OU handle that pressure against a team that's similarly yoked as talent goes? We saw them do it last week against a bad Temple team on the road. Can they handle that success? I think this goes a long way in determining how I feel about the rest of the season. Just as far as how they handle this game. Do they avoid the penalties? Do they avoid the special teams mistakes? The things that cost them games in the past, can they avoid those setbacks?
I couldn't have said it better. And I'll just add, I'm not convinced OU is the best team in the SEC. I'm certainly not convinced of that. And I'm not even convinced they're one of the five best teams in the SEC. I'm not. Like, I'm really not. And if they lose this game, it will be, that will be troubling, I think, for a few different reasons. But when you look at Texas struggling, and Arch Manning struggling, when you look at, I mean, South Carolina just got beat by Vanderbilt, which Vanderbilt's a good team. I think Vanderbilt's a good team. Actually, the one team that, it's actually Tennessee.
Yeah. We can talk about that.
Might be the game that has changed my, like, it's probably Texas and Tennessee are the two games I look at differently compared to the preseason.
Yeah.
Like, that's a game where if things continue, like, if you don't win at Tennessee, that's probably okay. Right. Yeah. Like, but like, none of these games are unwinnable to me. I mean, even watching LSU Florida, I was not impressed with LSU.
Telling you,
wasn't impressed. So all of that, but all that is to say, you're at home. You're a near touchdown favorite.
You gotta win this.
You just win this game because what? Texas will be better in a month. They will be. Mm-hmm. How much better? I don't know, but they'll be better. Tennessee's gonna be tough. Winning in Alabama is gonna be tough. Winning in South Carolina is gonna be tough. Beating LSU is gonna be tough. But I mean, man, if things don't look a lot better than they did a month ago for Oklahoma, one of the reasons why I say that is because I genuinely feel like they should win this game.
Yep,
I feel pretty confident about that, actually.
I do too.
They should win.
Yep.
Anything else about this matchup?
No, just excited to see it play out. Get out of it healthy. Go into bye week in Kent State. Poor Kent State. They're playing Florida State this week with Tommy Castellanos, and is probably about to give up another 70 burger and then has to come to Norman in 2 weeks. I'm just getting to 4-0 and then presumably 5-0 heading into the Cotton Bowl. Give me all that energy. I want every bit of that because there's some recompense to be had in that game. So,
recompense. Yeah. I like that. Word of the day.
It's going to be very satisfying if we get to that point. So got to win this one first, but feel pretty good about the Sooners' chances.
That's going to do it for us here on this installment of the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate you guys tuning in as always. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. Become a VIP member over at OU Insider today. We will have all kinds of coverage. We've had all kinds of coverage this week. We will have more coverage Friday, Saturday leading up to the game. We'll have you covered from every angle on game day as Jackson Arnold returns to Norman, Oklahoma, where he played football before he hit the portal. He played in Oklahoma.
Crazy
how things change. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, we will see you next week on another episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.